Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fake the Nation, episode 373.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about culture, and where we duly and fully recognize Labor Day by not laboring this week. However, we do have phenomenal conversations saved for you specifically for this occasion in the vault. And coming up is topic number one. Next topic, we are going to jump into some ethical quandaries, and joining me in sound judgment is the wonderful journalist from the Boston Globe and podcast host of Say More with Shirley Leung. It's Shirley Leung. Hey, Shirley.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
And we are also joined by iconic comedian who is currently on tour with the Live and Livid.
Live and Livid.
Show.
Yes.
And you can find all of that information on our website. It is the one and only Margaret Cho. Hey, Margaret.
Hello.
So let's dip into the first ethical quandary here. Someone wrote into the ethicist of the New York Times and asked, my salary is too high. Is it wrong for me to stay in my job? And I just like just that headline. I was like, what? Who feels that way? And then this is what she said. She said, less than a year ago, I switched from a job at a nonprofit whose mission I was deeply passionate about to a more senior role at a nonprofit in a different sector. And I was very underpaid previously. And now she's basically making a bunch more money. And she says, what worries me is that my salary is about 20 to 30% higher than comparable jobs at similar organizations. Though my employers hired me for my years of experience, it's now clear to me that the job doesn't actually require my level of experience. This nonprofit could easily pay a significantly less experienced person significantly less money to do exactly what I do. And so basically, she does all the work easily and very quickly, and she doesn't go above and beyond. So she wonders, back to her letter, am I doing wrong by using up extra resources at a job where I am not willing to go above and beyond? Should I tell them they created an incorrectly scaled position? So I guess, what were your first thoughts when you saw this, even just headline? And have you ever felt bad about being paid too much for not doing too enough?
No, because I've been underpaid so many times.
Yeah.
Where I felt that I deserved more. And so I don't ever think about, whether or not I'm getting overpaid for something, just because I have been underpaid for decades.
Yeah.
So to me, it always balances out in the end. But I think, for her moral compass, if that's what she wants to do, it's up to her. But I never think about it in those terms.
Shirley?
I'm a journalist, so I've never felt overpaid. In fact, I think journalists, we specialize in being underpaid. So it just seems like such a strange question. A very first world problem, right? And to feel, am I being overpaid? I'm only working, it only takes me 40 hours to do my job. I feel like I should be working more. And so, I thought that the response from the ethicist was, to say, listen, like, not everybody works, more than 40 hours. Maybe this is okay to work just 40 hours. And clearly, they probably did some research to figure out how much you should be paid, right? So this is in line with the industry standard. So, and she probably just doesn't, this person probably doesn't like her job.
It's also part of the mindset that, like, if you're not suffering, you're not doing enough, right? Like, it sounds like she just endured a lot of suffering with not very much pay. And she had that kind of, like, she wore that like a badge of honor. And now she's at a job where there isn't enough suffering, And it's interesting because, I mean, again, like, as a comedian, I was underpaid I've been underpaid most of my career. And then there are moments, right, where like you do a corporate gig or something and you're just paid wildly more for the exact same product than you would in another, you know, in another situation. And so there's these insane imbalances built into like the job of being a comedian that I think are, that do give me, sometimes I'm just like, wow, like, can we just balance this all out? Can the ones that are underpay me just come up a little? And like, and then these ones could get like, it's crazy. Some of the imbalances that you see in the entertainment business, but it is really common. And one of the things they did talk about in terms of like setting your rate is like it kind of like what Margaret was saying, this is about a full career, the rate isn't necessarily about like this job, it's like about a lifetime of what is this work that you do. So I feel like it makes sense to, I don't know, I would just take it. I would use the extra time to like know?
Well, it also made me think that it was odd that she was complaining that she wasn't working more. And it made me think, does that mean you're not happy in your non-work life? You know, because if you get to work less than you normally are used to, then you get to spend more time not working. And so which is desirable for most people, right? I get to spend more time, you know, I don't know, on my hobbies, with my family. I get to do something else. Work doesn't consume me so much that I can't think about anything else. So it was all around a very strange situation.
Mm-hmm. Although I can see a little bit of that. I think I have it in me too, of just like, I'm supposed to be worked to the bone. You know what I mean? I can see, you know, I don't actually have like a, you know, I don't have like a great, I went to a therapist once who told me that I need to schedule downtime, and then schedule things that I would do with my downtime. She's like, you just don't know how to relax. And so I need you to schedule relaxation. And if that means that you have to like literally be like, I'm going to get a massage or whatever, I'm going to like go sit for 1 hour at a park and read, like schedule it so that you force yourself to do it, because otherwise you're not going to do it. Is I do feel like I'm one of these people that will just like fill every moment with like work or a chore or, you know, like I don't do very much downtime. So I sort of get a little bit...
Do you do that now? Do you schedule downtime, or was that did that stick?
I mean, this was pre-child. Oh, because I don't actually. There's no downtime now. Yeah. But there was a time. Okay, well, let's go on to another question. Another ethical quandary comes from a man who's been married for 40 years. And when they were first married, they didn't share much about their past dating lives. But one of the women he dated became a super famous musician. And he writes, I am in the habit of playing this artist's music, in part because of the personal connection and memories it evokes. Not long ago, my wife remarked that I am, quote, a big fan. I smiled, nodded, and changed the subject. My fear is that sharing this connection with my wife would jeopardize my continued enjoyment of this artist's body of work. No jealousy, I'm sure, just gentle ribbing I could do without. An ethical omission, question mark? So I don't know. Should he tell her? Shirley, do you think he should tell her?
So believe it or not, this has actually happened to me recently.
Oh my God.
Again, another husband in midlife crisis, I'm sure, wrote in.
Yeah.
So my husband recently was regaling me with his high school girlfriends. I mean, this is like 30 some years ago, you know, some detail. And I was like, why are you telling me this? You know, it's just like, and so my advice is, of course, don't tell your wife. It will just annoy her. You know, just keep it to yourself.
I agree. It's like, why? don't. Yeah. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. I mean, it also sort of depends. Like, I don't think there's a problem with not telling her. And so I think it's ethically, it doesn't seem like a problem for me at all. What I think is sad, as someone, I would like to be told if my husband dated a famous person, just so that I could then go and tell all of my friends or anyone at a cocktail party. You know what I mean? Like, I love that.
I didn't think about that.
Oh, I mean, I will dine out on shit like that for
maybe
hours.
That's how you should frame it. You know, I could have married so-and-so.
Yeah.
But instead, I married you. That's how much I love you, honey.
And now you can go tell everyone that I could have married so-and-so.
Well,
and it makes you look good. I picked you over this extremely famous person.
Oh, that's nice, too.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think there's some fun in that. It's funny because my husband is an actor and he did a lot of like improv comedy and we'll be watching something and he'll be like, oh, I was an improv troupe with that person or whatever. And I'll be like, what? And I immediately tell Jason has had actual experience with this, you know, and I find it so fun. I don't find it like weird or anything. But it is interesting, like he never shared very much about his previous dating history, just like very broad strokes. So my question for my last question for the two of you is, how much do you share? Do you feel like should be shared?
I don't.
You don't?
I just don't in general. I don't. I mean, it depends, I guess, if they're asking, but I really don't. I don't know. I feel like that should remain private. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the you that existed before the person isn't. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with Margaret. I mean, I don't feel the need to share my prior dating relationship, but I do think guys, that's not the case with guys. I think they love to share. I think the guys love to share about all their past dates, you know, no matter when. But now, it would be less annoying if my husband had told me that early on. I mean, we are celebrating our 20th, anniversary this year.
Wow, it's like, mazel tov.
Yeah, but just to tell me this year, let me tell you a little bit about my high school girlfriend. It's like, I'm not interested. You should have told me at the beginning, not now. I'm just not interested right now.
Oh my God, no. So my husband is more like Margaret, like he doesn't really disclose that kind of thing from before. And then sometimes something will happen and he'll be like, oh, this actually reminds me of like this high school girlfriend that da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, what? Tell me more. I'm like a gossip hound. Like I want the stories. Like I want them so badly, you know? So my reaction is always like, yes, dish, tell me everything. You know, what was she wearing? Like, let's get into it, you know? All right, folks, what do you think should this guy tell his wife? By the way, the ethicist agreed with all of us, which is that he doesn't have to. It's completely fine. So don't worry about it. That, my friends, is the end of the show. The two of you are just so utterly fantastic. And I would love for the people of Fake the Nation to be able to follow you in all the wonderful things that you do. Margaret Cho, where do they do that? And remind us of your tour.
My tour is called Live and Livid, and you can get tickets on margaretcho.com. I'll probably be coming to where you are, so check it out. You can find me on Twitter at Margaret Cho, on Instagram at Margaret_Cho, and on TikTok at The Margaret Cho.
Folks, go to this show. If you've never seen Margaret Cho live, it's something it should be a part of your summer plans, a part of your fall plans, however long this tour lasts. It's such a delight. It's such a joy. Shirley Leung, where do people find you?
Yes, I am write a column for the Boston Globe. I'm also the host of Say More with Shirley Leung. It's a half hour show. We put on, when you think of Boston, we have big thinkers, big innovators, but I don't have the chance to talk to them. And so this is my chance to talk to the biggest thinkers and innovators. And it's, you can find the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Folks, get to the subscribing button on your podcast machine for Shirley Leung's show. It sounds phenomenal. Let's take a quick break so we can hear from our sponsors and come back. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a roundabout 8 exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. And we are back. And next topic. We read a piece in HuffPost called "Why Is Every Man on Dating Apps Suddenly in Therapy? It Might Not Be a Good Thing," written by Emily McCombs. And to talk about it, I'm joined by author and co-host of the podcast Democracy-ish. It is the wonderful Wajahat Ali. Hey, Waj.
Hey.
I am also joined by comedian, and you could hear his stuff all over Spotify, and you could read his book, Pardon My Spanglish. It is the wonderful Bill Santiago. Hey, Bill. So the writer in this piece had taken a break from dating apps, but recently rejoined that world and noticed something different. She writes, quote, "But there was one new trend I immediately noticed that hadn't been a thing in the last time I swiped faces. Suddenly, every man was putting in therapy on his dating profile. I don't mean one or two. It was ubiquitous enough to join the ranks of the most common dating ad cliches, like posing with a giant fish. Was being in therapy the new giant fish, I wondered." So, I mean, I don't know. Like, what? I don't think you're on very many dating apps these days.
Only a few. The ones that my wife allows.
Bill, I don't know what your relationship is to dating apps. Have either zero. Of you kind of seen this yourselves?
No, I don't do the dating apps. I can't bring myself to take that step. It's just, I don't want to. I still have this romantic notion of kismet, that you meet someone
in person
and you hit it off.
Right.
And you take it from there.
What about the kismet that belongs to, like, literally just being set up by friends? Is that something that happens for you?
I don't think that's ever happened for me.
Oh, got you. No friend is confident enough in you.
Not to, well, no. People have recommended things.
Right. Okay.
People, but it, and introduced me, but not with the intent.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Oh, it's funny because I feel like setting someone up on a blind date is a little, like, oddly old school, even though I feel like we need it now more than ever. Because people are so frustrated by dating apps, you know, and I'm just like, okay, why don't we just do the thing where friends recommend friends, you know, with the full knowledge that if it doesn't work out, like, let's all be cool, you know, it doesn't have to be a big fucking deal if it doesn't work out. I just want to throw that into the atmosphere as, like, can we get that going? Let's just have friends just setting up people on blind dates. It's like, I would, in another life, I was like, I probably read fortunes, and I probably just set up, like, youngins, you know, on dates. Like, it just seems like something I would personally love to do. But getting back to the subject at hand, OkCupid literally confirmed this trend. There's a 21% increase in mentions of mental health and therapy on OkCupid profiles between February and July, and a 4% increase in August 22 compared to August 21. It seems like men are kind of figuring out that women want to know that they are in therapy, that they're fucking down with therapy. Waj, you had mentioned Andrew Tate earlier. So there's, like, where are men, like, on the pulse of, like, the kind of edgelord versus, like, cool with therapy? You know what I mean? I'm just trying to figure out where, like, men are and what they're figuring. Or is this just that men fucking figuring out a scam that if they put in therapy in their profile, they're going to get more clicks because they
both. So if men figured out that women like pink unicorns, you will see men saying, "Pink unicorns? I love pink unicorns." Right? I remember, like, my wife, she was telling me about a date she had. My wife is, like, so sweet, and sometimes she was gullible in the past. Like, she's all into, like, helping people and refugees and world health. And there is this guy who's like, "World health and refugees? I'm really interested. Let's have a date at a really fancy restaurant where you can talk to me for 2 hours about it." So my wife goes thinking she's going to talk to him about, like, world health and refugees. And after, like, 6 minutes, he's like, "So," and he, like, you know, spits his game. So I do think a part of this is guys realizing, if I want to have sex with a woman in the future, I have to pretend to care about mental health. The second part of it is, I'm using myself as an example, after, like, 42 years of masochism and white knuckling it, for the first time in my life, last month, I started going to a therapist for my OCD.
Ooh.
And I shared it only because I know so many men would rather, the way we're built, like, usually men my age and older, it's like, you have a choice between going to therapy or dying. like, well, just kill us now. Just kill us immediately. And so the reason why I shared is because a lot of guys in the DL were like, thank you for sharing. You're helping remove the stigma. A lot of women, especially like wives, were saying that. So I think there's a balance, especially as we're coming out of this pandemic and there's climate change and people are realizing, oh, there's less of a stigma. Oh, I can go talk to a therapist. Oh, I'll still be seen as a man. And then the second part is, oh, women will have sex with me and I will increase my percentages of having sexual conquests if I actually admit I'm going to therapy. It's a combination that I think if it's done sincerely can actually be a massive benefit, especially to women, so they don't deal with toxic men. That's my take on it.
So, Bill, have you noticed, let's say in the community of comedians, a trend among men that's more pro-therapy?
I guess in passing, people mention it. You know, it's not something that I necessarily get into with them. If I think, I know a few comedians who are in therapy, but have been for a long time, you know.
But I feel like one trend I've noticed is just like the increase in like, oh, this is my 5 minutes on therapy. Like that people will
definitely.
Right? Like you've seen that
therapy,
in the
couples,
clubs. It's
therapy,
just like everyone has their 5 minutes.
Yeah, everyone has a therapist. It's out of control.
Yeah.
But was that our article? Did it comment on the number of times that women mention therapy in their profile?
Well, this is specifically because
taking for granted it's ubiquitous for women.
So just to give you an idea of like how women are responding to it.
No, I know they respond favorably.
Yeah, but basically 86%. If they answer yes to the question, who, if you believe therapy is good for people or necessary, they received 86% more likes and 49% more matches compared to men who said it's not for them.
Right. Well, just knowing that, of course, you're going to check that box, right? You want to be in compliance with anything that's going to help the cause in the bottom line.
Right. But I do think maybe some of these people, there's like obviously the people that are like, I'm just going to click the yes because I know it's going to get me more.
A lot of times, saying that you are in therapy works as sort of a virtue signaling smoke screen.
Yes,
you know, I am okay. I've been cured. I'm about to be cured. Nothing to worry about.
I'm
here.
Open minded.
I'm exploring. I'm down with what you know. But what is? It's just a cover up. You know, very. I know a lot of people who are in therapy who are maniacs,
who need
so much help that no amount of therapy.
Well, like, for example, Waj.
You know, Waj.
A nonviolent sociopath known as Wajahat Ali.
Yeah, I know a lot of sociopaths who are in therapy, but because they say they're in therapy, they get that label of A-OK.
Oh, they're cool.
They get that safe pass, but they're not. They're just using it. I see this all the time. And I know therapists who tell me, therapy, you know, it can help. But, you know, like even like couples therapy tells me, look, if you go in for couples therapy, this is a therapist friend of mine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. I love this behind the scenes intel. Okay.
Yeah. If you go to a couples therapist, the chances of that helping you stay together are slim. It's more like a relationship crowbar process to help you, you know, separate. That's
right.
what ends up happening.
Right.
More often than not, in his experience as a professional.
So I have friends who are in couples therapy who are like among the best couples I know.
Fantastic.
And they go, they actually went as like a preventative measure.
Oh, okay.
And I thought that was interesting because they figured out like, oh, if we just know how to communicate better, then we won't have problems. Like they would like have little problems. They'd be like, oh, I think we should figure out how to communicate this better. And they just like went as a preventative measure. And they continue to be the greatest couples, which I think is great. Like don't use it as a fixer, like get in there and figure out how to communicate, because that's the number one problem basically with every couple is communication. And I think a lot of women have a problem with like men, you know, men don't often just, I don't mean to be so fucking gendered here, but like oftentimes it's been the case with me in relationships with men, we'll just like centralize it to me, is that like they couldn't talk about what was wrong. Like, what are your feelings about this? Like, why are you mad? Like, what are you upset about? What should have gone differently? And so I feel like giving them tools to be able to like verbalize those things made the relationship better.
That's
so it
what
makes
we did.
Sense. Huh?
Yeah, that's what we did. So exactly what you said, my wife, a couple of years ago, she goes, we have to go to couples therapy. And I'm like, woman, I will never forgive you for this. Like, why? and I'm like, aren't things going well? She goes, things are going well. I think it'll just help. It'll just make things better. So we went and we just had a couple of sessions. And the good news was the therapist was like, listen, I wish every couple was like you. You're fine. But it helped. What it helped was specifically my wife just said, certain things sometimes when I communicate, you don't listen, or maybe I need to communicate better for your male brain to understand. And then yeah. I was able to articulate, oh, that's what you wanted from me? Why don't you just tell me? And so it made a really good situation better for us.
But also, Bill, I want to say now, you said virtue signaling, and I literally have in my notes virtue signaling, because I do also think, first of all, watch, that's incredible. And that's, I think, how my friends use therapy. It's just like they communicate better as a result. But I also think when it comes to like the dating apps or whatever, there's so much. I sometimes help my friends swipe. Okay. I'm not in the business myself, but I will be a wingman. And so I help my friends do some profiling, looking at profiles and swiping or whatever.
That's a very powerful advisory position that you.
Because I loved, I mean, as the listeners know, I was very good at online dating. And so I want to like spread that sunshine wherever I can. And I find some of the ways that people virtue signal, like I think it's great when people are in therapy and then if they have to like signal it on a dating app, I do find that annoying, but I also find that it could be useful, right? I'm on both sides of that. It's like, are you working too hard right now to tell me that you're fucking cool? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I see that point. I also want to say, did you get your thoughts on this final thing is this thing that Jonah Hill did. So he became, he got in the little, the tabs because he was using therapy language with a girlfriend. And he was using it like, my boundaries are that you, I'm making this up, I don't remember what he said, but he was just like, had controlling demands. And he was like, you know, and those are my boundaries. But it's like he was using boundaries as a form of control. So he's using therapy speak to kind of like get what he wanted, which is not the fucking point, you know?
Aspect, right? It's the performative aspect, like you're mentioning of like some of our friends who are probably social pets who then end up using it's like almost, you know, let's do an old school reference, like Sopranos, where he does therapy for all these years and finally in the final season the therapist goes like, I think you're just using this to validate and rationalize your own criminal behavior without actually seeking any resolution.
Yes,
to it.
Yes. Yeah, by know? The way, spoiler watch.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
Spoiler's been out for 20 years.
And so I think that aspect of it, women do have to be careful about the performative aspect of therapy and the fact that they're virtue signaling.
Yeah, but even that, you're just assuming that it's just men who do that. Women do that.
Men and women. Sorry. Men and
everyone. Oh, yeah. Everyone can be an asshole.
One thing that I have noticed is that once people are in therapy and it's working for them or not, but once they're in that, you know, they assume that it's okay for them to insist that everyone get it. Everyone should be in therapy. No matter, even if you have a fantastic life and everything is going good, no, you would still, it would be better with therapy, it would be in therapy. And it's no different from religion. Everyone has to be saved. No. There's original sin. I don't care what your private life is. I don't care what you do. You are a sinner and you got to get saved. And it's a lot like that with therapy too. I have friends who are just like, no, you got to go to therapy. You got to go to therapy. You got to go to therapy. Everyone has to be in therapy. If you're not in therapy, you're less of a human
being. I also think like it's okay, you know, to like, I'm not in therapy currently, you know what I mean? Like, but I fucking have done some therapy, you know, whatever. You know, I think it's also okay if you're kind of like, I think I'm like handling things okay right now, you know? Like, you know, there isn't, I don't like that, like the pressure of like, you better be in therapy. Like, I also hate that, you know? Yeah. So I think that's a great point. All right, folks, let me know, are you online dating and have you seen the in therapy fucking button? And what do you think of it? Hit me up. And that, my friends, is the end of the show. What a wonderful time I had speaking with both of you, despite the fact that you have more children than me. And obviously, your lives are more difficult.
I'll lend them to you if that'll help you get them.
We're just stronger and more resilient people.
You're just stronger and more resilient people, and that's it. That's just what I need to learn. No, I love you guys. And I want the people of Fake the Nation to be able to follow you and all the wonderful things that you do. Bill Santiago, where do they do that?
At Bill Santiago all over the place.
Great.
BillSantiagoComedy.com.
Also look him up on Spotify if you don't live in a town where he's performing.
Amazon, the book, Pardon My Spanglish, all that stuff.
Bookshop.org.
wherever you want to get your book.
You know what I mean? Try and do it from an independent bookseller. I'm just saying. Wajahat Ali, where do they do it?
Well, there was this health site called Twitter, which is now called X. And on X, I'm at Wajahat Ali until that site shuts down. I'm also on Threads and Instagram at Insta Wajahat. And yeah, I just wrote a book. The paperback came out this year called Go Back to Where You Came From and other helpful recommendations on how to become American.
Oh my God. Do yourself a favor and read his book. Follow him on defunct and non-defunct social media platforms. He's just such a breath of fresh air. And that is the end of the show, folks. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you're having a wonderful, wonderful Labor Day. I want to thank everyone who makes the show a possibility. That's our fantastic producer, Andrew McGuire. Thanks to Gabby Alter for our theme. Thanks to everyone at HeadGum for making the show a possibility. You can email us at fakethenationpodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's fakethenationpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to see me, I'll be in San Diego on September 27th and San Francisco on September 29th doing the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me stand-up tour. Otherwise, you can find out all my details on the social medias, and we will be back in your earballs next week.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.